There's power in every purchase because every time we buy a Black-led brand, we make room for another Black-led brand. And y'all know I love my lip bar products. That's just one to name a few.
There is a whole collection of Black-led products that fit into your daily routine. Show Black founders some love, not just during Black History Month, but all year long.
That's right, y'all. Black founders and the products they bring to the table are creating a whole new world of choices at Walmart.
That's right. Go to walmart.com/blackandunlimited to discover all the amazing Black-owned products you can add to your daily routine.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what's up, good people? Our kids are lucky to grow up in the era of the internet where information is available right at their fingertips. But sometimes the internet and even in-school curriculums leave our kids with more questions, and they look to us for the answers. The Ellises and the Time Machine is a book for kids and adults that answers the questions our kids have been asking all year. Why do we say Black Lives Matter? We answer this question while looking back at American history through the eyes of our young Black children. Get your kids a copy of The Ellises and the Time Machine. Why do we say Black Lives Matter?
Available now at Amazon.com.
Hey, I'm Kadine.
And I'm DeVal.
And we're the Ellises.
You may know us from posting funny videos with our boys.
And reading each other publicly as a form of therapy.
Wait, I make you need therapy?
Most days.
Wow.
Oh, and one more important thing to mention, we're married.
Yes, sir, we are. We created this podcast to open dialogue about some of life's most taboo topics.
Things most folks don't want to talk about.
Through the lens of a millennial married couple. Deadass is a term that we say every day. So when we say deadass, we're actually saying facts. 100. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We about to take pillow talk to a whole new level.
Deadass starts right now.
So this story time is very important to me because this story time will bring everybody to the point in my life when I realized that my Blackness mattered to me and to everybody else. I remember walking into the living room when I was 7, 8 years old. My parents were sitting on the couch where they typically are, but my mom looked a little bit more pensive. You know when your parents are typically on the couch and you like, I don't know if they fighting or not. So let me ease my way in there.
We know what that's like as married people now, okay?
So I walk in there and it seems a little tense and I'm like, I don't know if I want to sit in here. But I see my mom doing the church rock. You know, you do the church rock. So I'm like, what's she looking at? I look on TV and I see the video playing. It was a grainy video of a man just being beaten with sticks and rods. And I was like, yo, who are they beating like that? And my mom was just like, you know, we're not sure yet. And I said, well, who's beating that man like that? And he was like, it's the police. So I was like, yo, they're going to get in trouble. Like, they're on camera beating somebody. Like, this, they're going to get in trouble. And I seen the uncertainty in my mom's eyes when I said that. And she, you know, she kind of gave me the, and then she was just like, you know, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, you know, months later, we're watching the news. And My mom is real pensive again. Of course, I'm not old enough to understand what's going on, but I see her this time. She's pensive. Her eyes are a little watery. She's talking to my father. My father's, you know, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. They start calling my aunts and my uncles, and I remember hearing them saying, "They, can you believe they got off?" Mm. And I was like, "What?
Yep.
How?" And it was at that point that my mom had to explain to me what the situation was in America with black people and the police. And it was at that point where she started talking to me about everything that had transpired prior to where we are now. And I remember feeling mad. I remember feeling like I couldn't trust white people. And then I remember being hurt. Mm-hmm. That someone would consider me less than because of the color of my skin. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that I realized what my blackness was in America.
So when I think about your story time and mm-hmm. the feelings that you felt, it feels as though a piece of innocence is taken from you. Like you're robbed of a certain carefree living that you once had. And to think that we have to have these conversations with our children at 8 and 9 years old, or as whatever age you feel like they can comprehend it,
right. It
was something that was heartbreaking just for us. So Deval and I did plan to have the conversation with the boys. At the time it was
Jackson.
Because
all black parents plan on having that conversation.
Having the conversation, exactly. And I remember the two of us being very, like, teary-eyed about having to even do that and wondering when the right time was going to be. So considering everything, I felt like our hand was forced, and it came down to Deval sitting the boys down, of course, with me and having the talk. So what was going through your mind, like, leading up to those moments?
I mean, to be honest, it caught me off guard because, first, as a parent, I'm trying to process it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had Armand Aubrey get shot in broad daylight, mm-hmm. he's gunned down. Then we had the Breonna Taylor story come out.
Mm-hmm.
Then we watched George Floyd be murdered at mm-hmm. the hands of a cop. So my first thing is I'm fucking pissed. Like I don't want to have to sit down and compartmentalize, taking this anger, putting it aside so I can then speak to my child. What made me even more angry was that my 8-year-old is now asking me questions
mm-hmm.
about why everyone is so angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did the cop do that? And I'm like, oh my gosh, now I have to try to explain to him what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminded me of when I had to explain to him about Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're a parent, there's a certain level of innocence you try to protect because you don't want to tell your kids the truth. And then once that innocence is gone, you see them like lose hope.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I was like, damn, we had the Santa Claus talk. You know, he cried about that.
That was heartbreaking.
That was heartbreaking. You know, regardless of how you feel about Santa Claus or religion. It was a way for them to be happy. That's all I cared about, you
right.
know? So now he's asking me questions, and I'm explaining to him the way my mom explained it to me. We started mm-hmm. with history. We went back to slavery, and then from slavery,
right.
we went to the Civil War, and the Civil War, we went to Jim Crow, and
right.
and I went through the whole gamut.
See, not to cut you off, but I think it was super important that we take the approach as parents to mm-hmm. bring the historical,
yes.
factual
yes.
information behind
yes.
it when approaching the talk about
Absolutely.
Racism. It's not just based off of feelings or just, oh, I just don't like you because of your skin color. Like
right.
there are systems in place
yes.
that will keep
yes.
us down. You
yes.
know what I mean? So us as parents realized that it was important for us to do
right.
that, to make it about facts and about history so the children know that this is not just something that's going off of emotion.
Right. And I remember, you know, the way we teach our kids now is differently than our parents taught us.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents still taught us with a way of trying to protect us. But, you know, I remember my mom saying to me, everything that happened in the country happened, you know, since slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But then she also said there are certain people in the world who are just evil.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear that kind of left things abstract for me and had me thinking that people just didn't like me because of my blackness,
mm-hmm.
which there are some people who are just evil.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did differently was I explained Jackson through economics and said the reason why they marginalized black people from slavery
mm-hmm.
to Jim Crow or to mass incarceration was to make money.
Yeah, to leverage.
So then it kind of gives him a reason as to why things were happening. And I saw it like a light bulb kind of go off.
Right.
Wait a minute, so all this has to do with money. I'm saying, yes, it's classism.
Mm-hmm.
But no one just doesn't like they didn't just, God didn't just, because I remember having this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
If God is real, and I remember being 9 years old and saying, if God is real, why would he choose my people to be oppressed?
Mm-hmm.
If God loves us, why would he allow us to go through all of this pain?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't reconcile that at
right.
nine. So then you start
right.
to have those feelings of, God can't be real.
Right. Because
God would not allow us as people to be tortured here on earth.
Then you were in Sunday school questioning everything, and they were like, get this kid out of here. Where did he come from?
I questioned everything in Sunday school.
The blasphemy.
And I got in trouble.
Uh-huh.
But it all started from that. Like, you know, having to hear that my people were chosen to be slaves. And it was just like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know, and then, you know, they tell us about the Hebrews being slaves,
mm-hmm.
and they sent Moses to save them. And I'm like, well, y'all sent Dr. King and they killed him. So, like, so that mean we stuck in this? Like, these are the things that are happening in my mind until I started to educate myself as I got older.
Right.
And I want to approach Jackson with the same type of education so he can reconcile within themselves and come to terms with the fact that there is a reason why things are. And it's not just because of hate. Because it really isn't just because of hate.
And we also talked about the context of which our children's experience will be with race now that we've moved cross country from Brooklyn, New York to, you know, California. It's just... it's such a different experience for our children now, just based off of the schooling that they're experiencing differences with that. Jackson, of course, because he's enrolled, he was in the fourth grade now, but not being in a diverse class situation, which he was in.
He was the
Brooklyn.
Only black child.
He's the only black child in his class. You know what I mean? So there's always the conversation has to be had when he's the only one, of course, because he didn't experience that coming from Brooklyn. His school was super diverse. That's what Brooklyn is. We're a huge melting pot. We're known to be that in New York.
Right.
So we actually have someone coming on shortly, our guest today, who is going to speak with us a little bit more about unpacking racism and how we can do that with our children.
I'm excited.
In order to educate them. I think it's an amazing thing for sure. To be able to bring somebody in who's kind of like an expert.
Yes.
On, because we get so many people asking questions and like, you know, how did you, after we did the conversation with Jackson and we decided to record it and we decided to put it on our YouTube channel.
And it went viral.
And it went viral. A lot of people were asking about, you know, like, wow, I can't believe you guys recorded that. And I will say I was very apprehensive at first because I do still feel like a lot of things I want to keep personal, and I always laugh and joke and say that we're the most personal private people,
private
public people, because there's a lot of things that we don't share, you know.
But I think that had to be shared.
It
because
had to be, though.
I got a lot of feedback from even some white families who were like, I have never in my life thought about having to have that conversation with my kids, and having to see what it did to them was eye-opening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because when in history have we ever really seen a black dad having the talk with his sons and you seeing the emotional aspect of them breaking down and crying?
Yeah.
Typically when they show the talk, it's like the proud talk. This is what you have to do when the son gets angry and he walks out and he feels confident that he can conquer the world.
Right.
Nah, that shit be traumatizing.
Yeah.
You hear that and you're like, what?
Yeah.
So I could literally just be out minding my business, and if a cop approaches me and is having a bad day, I could be murdered and nothing may happen. And it's like, yes, that's the reality in America. People will villainize you. If you're murdered, if you're an unarmed black man and you get murdered by a police officer, there is a large probability that the media will villainize you regardless of what your history is, to make sure that it seems as if it's okay that you were murdered, and it's unfair. And that's the reality of what we have to tell our boys.
So here to help us understand why it's important to have these conversations with our children and give us some tips on what to say, because I think that's the biggest issue, is what do we say to these poor babies of ours? We have Amber Coleman Mortley. Amber, how are you?
I am doing well, or as best as you can during these times. How are y'all?
Absolutely. We're doing well.
We're doing well.
Can't complain. Amber is the Director of Social Engagement at EdTech nonprofit iCivics, parenting expert, and a mom of three. And on her blog, Mom of All Capes, she covers practical strategies for parenting in social emotional development. And most recently, Amber has been having conversations about how we can acknowledge what's going on around us on the podcast that she hosts with her kids, Let's K-12 Better. Thank you so much for coming back again with us, Amber. We had a couple technical difficulties last time, but this was definitely a topic and a conversation that I felt was so absolutely necessary that I said to DeVal and the team, we have to have Amber back on. Yes. So thank you for the repeat.
No, thank you guys. I'm huge fans of y'all. Like, I think you guys are doing amazing things out here. So I'm honored that you guys have asked me back. So thank you so very much. Pleasure is all
mine. No doubt. Yes. Awesome. Awesome. So, yeah, we've been just talking a little bit about, you know, the current times, racism, how it's been affecting our children, what's going on in the country right now, because mm-hmm. so many of us have children who are aware of the fact that something is happening. So, mm-hmm. So Amber, what is the approach that you feel parents should be taking when it comes to having the conversations about racism with their children?
Yeah, so first and foremost, age-appropriate honesty, right? You know, you want to make sure that you are honest and open with your kids. You want to also make sure that you're vulnerable with your kids. Like, it's okay mm-hmm. to expose your feelings a little bit about, you know, how you feel about what's going on. You also want to center your identity. So, you know, Black parents centering their identity, non-Black parents of color centering their identity, white parents centering their identity, to talk about these issues with our kids to make them more real, and then also to ensure that our kids are connecting, because these are serious concerns right. that all of us have, right? Right? Mm-hmm. Right? So we want to make sure that, you know, we're not only just being vulnerable and touchy-feely, but we're also, like, you know, being practical as well. They are kids. So we don't want to right. overwhelm them with too much information, but we want to give them the space to talk, right, with us in right. in a vulnerable way.
Yeah. You know what I've learned during this time is giving people grace mm-hmm. to understand, because even though my wife is Black and her parents are, her mom is Black, her dad is Indian, they come from a different culture. So mm-hmm. even in trying to get them to understand what Black Americans have gone through on this soil, to me, there was a little bit of gap. And we talked about this in Culture Clash.
Yeah.
When it came time to have the talk with Jackson and Kay kind of like shut down a little bit because she was pissed. Like, she just didn't want to talk to anybody about it. So I had to give her grace in knowing that my wife is also dealing with the fact that she's watching, you know, Black men and women murdered in the street. She got a husband and she got kids. Mm-hmm. So the way right. she wants to discuss it may not be the same as the way I want to discuss it.
Right.
So how important is it to give your partner grace when trying to find a way to articulate that to your kids together? Because that's what we went through. We spent yeah. weeks trying to figure it out before we actually
yeah,
did
and
it.
I think it was for me too. I was just of course very upset, very emotional about it. And I know that mm-hmm. children can pick up on that. So I had to find a way to center my emotions so that way I wasn't a whole basket case. Because then, of course, it's going to feed off onto the children. Yeah. They're going to worry, like, mom seems to be super, you know, upset right now. So how is it that, you know, we're going to get past this? I felt like that was going to be a question Jackson yeah. would have for me.
I think that that's something that, especially within the Black community, we forget the diversity of experiences, right, within the Black right. community. You know, right. like my kid's father, he's from Trinidad and Tobago. So same thing, right? Like,
same thing.
And he's from mixed race heritage. So he's got a lot going on in his head right now about this moment. And providing your partner grace, but also, like, speaking truth to power, right? Like, you know, telling to Kaneen, right? Like, this is how I'm viewing this moment right now, and this right. is why I'm experiencing it this way. And, you know, laying it out, right? Like, having a history lesson together, watching Eyes mm-hmm. on the Prize together, right? Like, learning about the Black American experience and relearning about the Black American experience together is one way right. that you guys can grow closer. Because, again, there's a diversity of experiences. You know, I'm fortunate to live in a community where there's 72 different countries represented at mm-hmm. my kid's school. So I know, like, in those different homes, like, people are having all of these different, like, ways of grappling with what's going on in the world, mm-hmm. very different from my own, right? And I have to allow even my friends, you know, and associates to have that space to process and say, how does this impact me personally, right? How does this impact what I already know, right? How does this challenge what I already know, right? About America and about growing up in America and America being this place of great promise, et cetera, right? That we hear,
right.
you know? So
yeah.
you do need to have that space in your home and outside of your home to give people time to process. And then the learning process has to be communal and familial.
Yes.
So I have a question, right? And mm-hmm. this is where I struggled. I used to always ask Kay every time I had a conversation with Jackson, did you think I've gone too far? Mm-hmm. Do you think I've told him too much? Mm-hmm. And I'll be 100% honest. As a Black man, I'm not afraid of making my son cry. Mm-hmm. Like, this is going to sound crazy, but I was talking to Kay the other day. Jackson can't go to martial arts. He can't go to jiu-jitsu because of COVID. So now I have to manufacture adversity, right? So we've been doing pull-ups, push-ups, and squats, right? So we have this thing where it's called Gimme Two, where, you know, he punched me in the stomach twice. I punch him in the stomach twice. So he's actually getting big and strong. So the two times I punch him in the stomach, he don't even flinch. So I'm like, I'm going to hit him and see if he can take it. So I hit him, boom, and he crumbled over. But then he got up, and I was like, you better not cry, right? So I'm like, you better not cry. So he didn't cry. I said, you got to learn how to suck it up and compartmentalize when you have people around. So I said, so now, you know, you got it together. He said, yeah, I got it together. So I said, come with me. We went to my bedroom. I said, do you want to let it out? Do you want to let the cry out? So he's just like, yes, I do. So finally, he breaks down to my arms. He cries, right? And I'm like, yo, it's good for you to be able to cry in a safe space where it's me and you. But you as a black man do not have the liberty to be emotional and reactionary in the world. Mm-hmm. And then I'm done with all of that. And then I go and I was like, okay, do you think I went too far?
You know, because I'm saying, experiment.
How, as a parent, do you know when you've gone too far? Like, I don't know.
You don't know till they're grown out of your house and like sitting on somebody's sofa getting like counseling. Like, honestly, guys, you don't. Like, I look at my daughters every day and I'm like, mommy's just doing the best she can. You know,
right,
like,
right.
right. Like, mommy's got her own issues and baggage too. Right, right. I would say this, like, as far like. You know, kudos to y'all raising like young black men in America during this time right now. Like, my sister's also raising black boys. And I'm like, every day, I'm like, I don't know how y'all are doing this, right? You know? So, I mean, any black child, right? At this moment, like, I don't know how we're doing it, right? We right. gotta do what we gotta. I think the most important thing is establishing with your sons, and I'll say with the listeners, with your children, is that you love them and that you are a place of refuge, right? You're not an enabling right. place. You're not a place
right.
of enablement,
right.
but you're a place right. of refuge. Like, you, my arms like are always that. Open. I can come to you. You know, I'm here for you, right? I'm not always going to make it easy for you, right? But I'm always going to make sure that you know that you are loved in this space for who you
in
are.
In this space, yep.
Right, and no matter who you grow up to be, you're gonna be loved here, right? So that's the number one thing, which I think y'all already do with your kids. And then secondly, like, with adversity and challenges, you know, we're athletes and we're not doing sports right now. So it's hard.
Right.
It is so hard, right? like you're right. Just
no, that
like...
is the truth. That is the truth. Because if he was in jiu-jitsu or karate, I wouldn't be hitting him in the stomach to test him and see if he could take it. I'd let him go with his peers and have
maybe
his
like maybe
matches.
Run the mile. Maybe run the mile instead. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll run my kids and I'll say, this is the time that you need to make it in. No, like, I'm not making, there's no excuses. You know, get down and back, you know, down the neighborhood and then back in this time, period. And if you don't, then here's 10 extra sit-ups and push-ups, you know?
Right.
So that pushes them a little bit. That puts the goals in their mind. You know, unfortunately, within America, as it's constructed right now in this point in history, there is no space for black children to, unfortunately, be soft and vulnerable, which I
say
find,
it again.
Yep.
Say
you
it
know,
again.
Like, I'll say it one more time. There is within this space right now in America, historically, contemporarily, up to this point, there has not been a space that has allowed black children to be vulnerable, to be soft, to be compassionate, to be, you know, I hate to say it this way, but like deserving of love. And black children deserve love, just like every other child, right? So, you know, we want to, as parents, provide this crusty layer, right? But we can't forget to provide the softness of heart, because when you're sending your child out in the world, you know, maybe they will, or maybe they won't, but they're going to be in a relationship with someone. So you can't send someone out there that's so encrusted that they can't be loved and they cannot love another person. Right. That there's the balance, right? You want to provide realism. You want to be realistic, but you also want to show them through modeling and show them through other means that, you know what, your vulnerable, soft, loving spirit and heart is extremely valuable. And someone is going to appreciate that. You know, I say that to my daughters all the time, you know, someone's going to love you and you're going to want to love someone else. And you have be open to that. And you're deserving of that. And you have to respect another person, right? So we're teaching kids how to love. And so we don't want to forget that. So that's just one thing I would add right there. But
Amber,
it's hard.
And saying that makes me think about our first conversation that we had when you talked about speaking positive affirmations to our children and when they actually first experience the idea of race. So when they start school, so as early as, you know, it could be daycare centers at like, you know, 2 and 3 or starting nursery. nursery school or kindergarten at 4 and 5, the importance of speaking positive affirmations into our children when they are introduced to race, i.e. being in school with a diverse amount of people, making sure that they know exactly who they are and they're proud of it. Like, you gave the story about your daughter going to school and her hair and things like that. So can you tell us a little bit about that beginning phase of the introductory, you know, conversation about racism and where it goes from there?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, I am a firm believer, I think I said this the last time, love is a revolutionary act, right? Like, you know, just period. Love is a revolutionary act. The idea of loving someone and being loved is a revolutionary thing. Unfortunately, historically, you know, Black people did not have access to that on plantations and then growing up and up to this moment. So we have to speak to our Black and brown children that they are valuable, right? They are lovable, that they are, you know, that they can do it, that they will face adversity, whether it's because of race or class or a myriad of other things, learning differences, ableism or disabled, right? Like your children are going to face a variety of experiences. You have to continue to affirm their humanity when they walk out the door. Again, we're not enabling our children. We are empowering our children.
Yes, empowering. Absolutely.
Empowering, right? Different E word, right? Because mamas want to coddle and love. You know, it's needed, right? You know, but we got to
be me all day. I'll be trying to, coddle, like, but I know I
empower.
Can't.
You can't do that.
Empower, empower. You are strong, right?
There has to be a balance, and I struggle with that, but thank God for Deval to be the voice of reason at a time like that. Because
it sounds like y'all got a good balance. Y'all got a good balance going on.
We do. Well, we have a balance now, right? And this is my concern, because I've always been around young men. My father had a young men's group in a church called the Junior Layman, where he mentored young men. I watched how he mentored them. You know, it was like he's like, you punch him in the stomach and then you kiss him on the forehead. You know, you have to, you know, give them that tough love, but then give them the soft love that they know that, hey, I'm here. But for a young woman, hopefully I have a daughter. Hopefully I have a daughter. Hopefully,
Amber,
I have
he's
a daughter.
Still on that, Amber.
Yes,
Amber, send us the recipe.
I said that three times.
At the very least.
Listen,
you can't do that to your daughter. You can't just punch your daughter. As a father, I can't go in there and punch her in the stomach and be like, psh, "Get up." You know, like, I can't do that. So then the roles might switch, and I always wonder, how do I, as a father, empower my daughter without coddling her and making her feel like, "Oh, you can always run to daddy." You know, because I know words mean a lot, so I know you can empower them. But what other ways can I empower her?
Yeah,
are we
best
speaking
ways.
About the
yes.
the actual daughter that we don't have?
Yes. I love yes. how y'all are like.
Yes.
Oh my just, God!
I love
if manifestation yes. was a person. Here he go.
Yes,
like yes. we have a listen.
Yes.
Okay, well, I will address this imaginary awesome daughter that y'all have.
Thank you, Amber.
And why?
Thank you. Thank you.
Because I'm also raising daughters. And I will say, you know, I tell my girls all the time, you know, you guys are Black women, right? Like, you are strong, you are capable, right? You need to challenge yourselves, right? Challenge yourselves and push yourselves outside of the things that you, and I would say, I guess this is with all kids, but challenge and push yourselves outside of the box of things you know that you can do. That's the first thing, right? Because when we're learning coding, so like some of them are loving it, some of them are not. And in that challenge and push, you build the capacity for resilience, right? You're building the capacity to like hang on to something, even if it gets hard and challenging, you know? So that's what you want for girls. And unfortunately, like the world has a way of like, just, I don't even know, like reminding you of your perceived place within society. You have to challenge that, right?
For
like
sure.
You have to say like, okay, you think that this is what I deserve, but this is actually what I think I deserve. And I'm gonna go for it despite what anyone says. So,
absolutely.
You know, daughters, sons, whoever, pushing your kid to see their value, right? Outside of how the world values them. And I would say son or daughter, son or daughter.
No,
so
definitely.
Check this out.
Definitely.
You know, I keep notes, right? Two things that you said already that I think I'm going to start to present to my kids all the time. First of all, is love is a revolutionary act. In particular, Black love. And this is funny because we were on the show Black Love, And people ask all the time, why does it got to be black love? Why can't it just be love? And I said, well, if you understood the history of this country, you would understand that black people were not allowed to love for a long time.
Yep.
So showing love to each other is a revolutionary act. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, building the capacity to be resilient. I say this all the time to Kadeen. She's like, why do you do that? Why you just trip the kids for no reason when they walk by? I'm like, I do that because they got to be resilient. All right. Get your ass back up. I tripped you. All right.
She's like, you're on another level. You're on another level.
Listen, growing up in Brooklyn, you had, like, we went through this.
We about to have child welfare services at our door, like, we heard you've been tripping your kids and busting their ass.
Listen, I'll be
so clean that shit up, DeVal, before they take my babies.
No, I'm not cleaning it up. I'm going to be honest. All right. Black people have had to raise their kids differently than the rest of America. And for the things that we have to do to our kids, people always want to say that we're parenting the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. I don't have the leniency to let you go out there in the world and make mistakes. Because you make a mistake, you could be dead.
You could go to jail. Right. Dead or jail. You know what I'm saying? Right?
Yeah. So I have to make you more resilient within my own home. And that's in part where you said earlier, Amber, was that black kids don't have an area to be compassionate. Sometimes I find myself trying to teach resiliency more than compassion.
You need to teach more compassion. More compassion.
Community.
Yes. Will, you know what I'm saying? Like, your home is a civic space. Here I go on the civics train, but like, your house is a civic space. We have a family constitution. So we've all agreed that there are like four tenets that, like, you know, respecting each other, you know, respecting technology. You know, there's two more that have evaded me, but like, you know, like, there are four tenets that we live by. And so within our family constitution, because we treat our home like a community. If someone doesn't do the dishes, they're failing the community for breakfast time the next morning, because now someone else has to come waste time to pick up where you left off. So when you raise your family unit like a community, you're building resilience. You're building compassion to intertwine together at the same time. So like, all you have to do is just kind of shift. I call it rebranding, obviously, because, you know, I'm thinking always like, oh, like, how can we market this idea for my kids? Like, you just want to rebrand it. Like, y'all, this is a team. This is a community, right? You're not being a good teammate right now. Like, how can you pick it up as to make yourself a better teammate, to be stronger for this family? And when you challenge your kid to be stronger for the family, and I say this to my daughters all the time, you got to be stronger for this family. You know, you're putting someone else in a position to be strong for you right now, and that is unfair to them. You know, now we all have our moments of weakness, and that's why we are a family, because we're here to help each other. But you're taking up more space than you need to, right? And so when you push them to think that way, like, oh man, like, I don't want to let down the team, like, right? Like, or I don't want to, you know, let down the community, then you're pushing them to be resilient and to have compassion, to think outside themselves, to value their contributions to a larger ideal, right? You're pushing them forward, right? And I say to my kids also too, like, the three of y'all are like, I made you for each other, right? Yes. Like, I made you guys for each other. Y'all got to have each other's back when we come out in this world, because mommy and daddy aren't going to be here for the rest of your life. So you got to be able to learn how to survive outside of this space when it's all said and done, when I'm gone.
Yeah.
And y'all got to be able to support each other when I'm gone.
Yeah, no, you're saying this, Amber, because one of my questions to you was like, how do we teach our children to continue to advocate for themselves when we are not around? You know what I mean? Because racism, as they get older, is going to start to look different. You know, as they get older, we start to explain to them systemic racism.
You can say that again. No, you can say it again. Racism is going to look different, because
it will.
Our form of racism is not the racism that our parents fought against or our ancestors fought against. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just looks different.
It looks different for them. So it's like, that's a way to continue to tell our children that, you know, how do we teach them to advocate for themselves when we're not around? Naturally, as parents, our children are younger now, so we feel like we can be the voice for them if need be, you know what I mean? If we feel like, say, for example, our children are out in this world at a extracurricular activity and we're seeing that there's some unfair treatment going on with the kids on the team or with a coach, like, we feel like we can step in and intervene. But how do we then kind of allow our children to be their advocates? How do we teach them to responsibly advocate for themselves? You know, some people were taking their children to protests so they could see and be on the front line and see what that felt like. You know, there are different ways to protest. And I think my issue in the very beginning of all of this was finding out where I fell in this ecosystem of change, right? What was going to be my role? And at first, all I wanted to do was take care of my household. I wanted to be the comfort and support from my boys and my husband. That's what I wanted to be. And then trying to figure out, okay, so how am I going to evoke the change that I want to see? So do you have any tips for people with children that were just like, you know what, how do we continue to teach them to be empowered as they get older?
So first of all, like, the idea of being a comfort, right, to your kids and your husband is not an ignoble idea. That is still a noble, very noble idea. That's awesome. That's super dope. Don't downplay that, because especially right now with COVID, like, everybody's
downplayed a lot now.
Right. Like, I'm sorry, but like, women are doing a lot of the lifting to keep everybody sane in the home. And that wears on you too. So do not think that that's ignoble. That's amazing. I would say though, like, if you want to like take it a step further, we actually had a podcast about like what's next, right? You know, there's a lot that you can just do in your home. Obviously donating, obviously, you know, just lifting up the voices of other people, educating yourselves and your kids, right? Like, I went into hardcore like African-American studies light with my daughters, right? Mm-hmm. I pulled out the history of the Caribbean because they have Caribbean ancestry. You know, I talked, you know, I pulled out documentaries, and, you know, I just wanted them to be firmly grounded in who they were, right? You do not want to have a Black child leave your home. And this is for anyone raising Black kids, right? Even if you are white raising a Black child listening to this, you are doing your child a disservice if you let them leave your home and they don't understand the history of who they are and who they really are, right? So I would say that, like, that is a revolutionary act. That there and of itself, leave it, let a raising a confident, well-aware Black child, that is part of adding to forward progress for this country.
I agree.
I will also challenge, like, teaching your kids to speak up for themselves, right? My daughters,
I do that all the time.
Super dope. My daughters are super comfortable calling out injustice, right? And they're not doing it in a way that's like, you know, rude, but they'll just say, you know, hey, I think that that's kind of like not cool or not fair. Like, can we, or that person sitting over there by themselves. I tell my daughter, I'm like, hey, was there someone at the lunchroom? And this is back when school was in session. Was there anyone at the lunchroom who was sitting by themselves? Did you invite them to your table? You know, was there a kid playing by themselves? So advocacy, it doesn't always have to be racially motivated or racially charged, but teaching your kid to speak up for others, teaching them that they have a responsibility to include others in what they're doing, right? And, and they don't, they're not obligated, but you should, right? Like, if someone's playing by themselves, bring them in, right? That helps you grow as a leader. That helps you grow as an ally. You know, other people look to you like, oh man, that person's super dope. Like, let me, you know, see what I can do to support what they're doing, right?
I love that.
You know, also, like, you know, my daughter was recently in the Times for a video she made on digital blackface. She researched digital blackface. She researched blackface in America. Her friend, her friends were changing their Roblox avatars to Black people in support of Black Lives Matter. And so she didn't feel
a whole
right
movement
about that.
Go ahead,
a whole
girl.
Movement, right? Yes. She was like, okay, what in the world? So she, I said, look, you can handle this. However, these are your friends. So she made a video. Instead of making those people feel bad, she made a video about it, an educational video about it, put it out there, and it was picked up. So, like, I'll say, you know, like, teaching them to use their voice in creative ways too, that's also part of this process, right? So, you know, hopefully I provided a few examples.
No, you've
definitely provided a few examples, and I know we're going to keep you around because we have to do listener letters.
Yeah, can, do you have like a couple more minutes just for us to do these listener letters? We have two. Yes. Okay, great.
No,
great.
But I think this was good. It was a lot of good information, you know, because as a father, you wake up every morning hoping that you ain't mess your kids up yesterday. Hearing from a professional, you know, that, okay, you're doing all right.
You're
doing all right, Deval, Kadeen. That kind of makes me feel
like,
good.
You know what, naturally, Deval, you and I, we've spoken about the fact that we were those children back in the day where we would see someone alone or by themselves, yeah. or I wasn't clicky with one particular group. I kind of like spread the love around, throughout right. everyone. We moved around. And I could see that already in Jackson.
He's the same way.
He's the same exact way. I've told the story before about a child in his class feeling sick. Jackson went to the bathroom with him. He had a little accident, and the child came back and told his mom, the reason why I asked Jackson to go with me was because I know that he wouldn't make fun of me or tell anybody. You know, so that made me feel good because I was like, look at my baby having compassion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah,
and
that's
all the empathy. Layers of empathy. I love that. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back more with Amber as we get into our listener letters, which is now DeVal's favorite portion of the show. He likes to say that's my favorite part because I'm nosy. However, quiet as it's kept, it's DeVal's favorite portion, so we'll be right back.
Hey, what's good, y'all? I think it's important for you to understand why Black representation in media is important. It's important because the media represents how people view us. And it's important that they understand that Black people are not a monolithic people.
That is a fact. And the next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truth.
Black Stories, Black Truth is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story.
In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience.
Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all, let me tell you, after the Love Against the World tour, my social battery is depleted, drained, no energy. How do you feel, babe?
I don't know. You know, it can be easy for people to ignore their social battery and spread themselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up one after another in the wintertime.
That's a fact. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge after that? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time like me.
You know what? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/deadass today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/deadass.
There's power in every purchase, because every time we buy a Black-led brand, we make room for another Black-led brand. And y'all know I love my lip bar products. That's just one to name a few.
There is a whole collection of Black-led products that fit into your daily routine. Show Black founders some love, not just during Black History Month, but all year long.
That's right, y'all. Black founders and the products they bring to the table are creating a whole new world of choices at Walmart.
That's right. Go to walmart.com/blackandunlimited to discover all the amazing Black-owned products you can add to your daily routine.
All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so. And get this. Near, yes, Near, the OG that I used for years, has now leveled up. And they have these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. My personal favorite, coconut oil and vitamin E, because it's gentle on my skin. And down to the body cream, rich cocoa butter and vitamin E body cream, which is a modern take on indulgent and classic femininity. Okay? It works in as little as 3 minutes, no nicks, no cuts, and the smooth skin lasts days longer than shaving. Nair's new sensational shower and body creams are free of all those nasty chemicals, so you can feel good about what you're putting on your skin. Have a me time moment with Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online. Thanks for sticking around. We're back. We're going to get into the listener letters portion of the show. We kept Amber around because, of course, we love to have some expert opinions when y'all write us in, you know, so we can give you a nice full answer.
Yes.
So I'm going to jump into the first question. All right. I am in an interracial same-sex marriage. I'm Jamaican. Yadi. Link up. I am Jamaican and my wife is white Caucasian. I was adopted and raised by a white family. So growing up, I've always been deemed the whitest black person, which drove me crazy because I'm so articulate. She said, Jesus, take the wheel. We're looking to foster and adopt children in the future. However, although my wife is aware of systemic racism against people of color and has been present for racism that's taken place against me, I don't know how prepared she'd be to handle potential issues that take place when we have children. I'm sadly prepared for the continued racism that we will experience as an interracial lesbian couple and are aware that we will likely face similar challenges when having children. My question is, would it make sense for us to take courses or work with coaches, etc., to get us to better understand how to navigate life as an interracial lesbian couple and how we can do our best to protect our family dynamics and children's identities in the future?
That's a lot.
I thought that was three questions, but honey child, that was a whole loaded question.
Yeah, that's a whole loaded question.
Yeah, but I think it was a very well thought out question. And clearly the fact that she is already knowing that she's going to have these conversations with her partner, with these future children. Amber, can you chime in and tell us what you're thinking maybe the best approach? She's asking particularly about courses or working with coaches. What would be the approach here, you think?
Yeah, the best approach, I believe, would be to do some sort of counseling or coaching, right? Just so that you guys all have the same baseline, right? Like, you want to make sure you're speaking the same language. You want to make sure that any feelings or emotions that you have, you have the techniques and the skills to work through those, right? You know, the fact that your wife is your wife means that she's jumped in the trenches with you. So she's about that life on some level already.
Right.
You know, like, right? Like, she's in
I love
there,
that.
Right?
She's about that life. Okay.
Right. Exactly. She's like, yo, you're it. You're the one. Let's do this. So, like, you know, because of that, like, you're already marching in a somewhat similar direction. I would definitely try to get some sort of counseling, you know, just to make sure that y'all are all on one accord. Because when you bring when it's two adults, you could be like, I don't like you. I don't like you. All right. Peace. Bye. It's over. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
When you sprinkle in kids into a situation, you're sprinkling in nurturing. Love languages are very different. Levels of understanding are different. You know, your partner is going to be a white woman raising. And if you guys adopt children of color, like black or non-black children, like there's a lot that goes into that, understanding that, you know, needs that aren't, that might not be intuitive needs to this white, your white female partner, right? Your wife. So like, there's a lot of education that needs to go into it. And, you know, all kids are the same, right? But society creates the differences that are around each child. So hopefully that's helpful.
You know what I've noticed that that is very problematic for me with interracial couples is not the couple, like you said. It typically is not the couple. This person loves that person. There's nothing wrong with that. Once you sprinkle in children, I always tell a story about the young man on my high school football team. His dad was white, his mom was black. We're walking around Kings Plaza during a half day, and we all have on, you know, our football stuff, but we were congregating in more than groups of four. And during the time, it was stop and frisk. So we're walking around Kings Plaza, and
they
said to us, this is the mall in Brooklyn, that we look like a gang. So they detained all of us, put us in handcuffs, and we're waiting there. And they're like, you know, we're calling parents. So his dad comes in, and his father, a white man, comes in and just like, what happened? What's the problem? So then his son was just like, I don't know. We were just walking around, and they detained us. And he was just like, they wouldn't just detain you for no reason. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, bro, he has no clue. He's just like, no, I don't want to hear that. What were you doing? Mm-hmm, well, and he immediately treated his son as if he was in the wrong. And then his son, you know, looked confused and was just like, what do you mean? Like, this happens all the time. And he's like, that doesn't just happen. You must have been doing something. Get your shit and let's go. And here I am saying to myself, his father's probably not racist, right? But his father probably doesn't understand the black experience. And when you don't educate yourself on your partner or what they've gone through, when things like this happen, it can be very problematic. Remember we watched American Son? American Son, it was
Kerry Washington.
With Kerry Washington. Yeah. She played a black mom who was very protective over her son, had a white father who was a police officer. The son ends up getting pulled over by the police, and they haven't seen the child in about, I think it was like a day and a half. So they were like, where's my son? Where's my son? The cop is asking all of these questions as if his son was going to be treated like a typical white inmate. And he wasn't. His son would end up being murdered. I don't want to give the movie. Would end up being murdered at the hands of police because he was moving in a manner that he thought was okay. Because as a young black man who didn't realize his blackness, he thought he had the liberties to speak back to police and reach in his glove compartment and things happen. And I'm like, that becomes problematic for me in this country when people say, oh, race doesn't matter. Yes, it does.
It does.
We can't sit here and continuously act as if we live in a freaking utopia.
Right.
We don't. Like, there are things that need to be addressed in this country. And for people who do date interracially, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on both parts.
For sure. And there shouldn't be a downplaying of one's experiences versus the other experience. Because I think sometimes that happens as well, too. Like, oh, Deval, I can't experience what you experience as a black man. And I'm your wife. And I don't attest to believe and be able to feel and understand every emotion that you may experience as a black man, as a black father, raising black sons. So I think having the compassion and having the foresight to say, you know what? I may not understand your particular experience, but I can at least empathize. I can listen. I'm willing to learn.
Right.
Those are some things that I think would work particularly in this scenario.
Well, I'll even go a step further because I was having a debate with one of my castmates who's a black woman who was talking about dating outside of her race. And she has said it's not her responsibility as a black woman to teach a white man her history. And I said, listen now, if you choose to date outside of your race, you also have a responsibility to not only teach him, but learn his history so you can understand where his blind spots may be. Because some of his microaggressions may come from him not knowing. Mm-hmm. You know how many people I know, white and black, growing up in the public school system, do not know the true history of this country. So when you say things like systemic or systematic oppression, they're like, I don't even know what that is. Mm-hmm. Right. So you expecting him to understand your plight as a black person is kind of unfair.
Absolutely.
You got to educate. Mm-hmm. You know,
can I just say I'm so glad that you said that because I run in a lot of circles where people are doing anti-racism work. And so, you know, black people say, well, I'm not teaching white people. And I'm of the I will teach whoever will learn because that's one more person who knows. Right. It's exhausting work. Right. But we just. A friend of mine was like, we don't have the numbers. And she's right. Like, we can't just assume that people are going to magically learn about black culture, black history, just because the information's on Google. You got to know what keywords to type in to get the right information to begin with. So like, like, honestly, you don't have to be that one person on your job teaching every white person what it means to be black. Don't put yourself out there like that. You know, don't do that to yourself.
They're going to be like, here she go again. Here she coming again.
Exactly. But I will say, like, yo, like, if you're in a relationship with someone that's non-black, you know, whether they're Asian or Hispanic or white or whatever, like, you got to bring them along because they've jumped into this pit with you, right? Like, they don't, they might not know what they got into. Yeah.
Right.
Thanks for saying that. Thanks for saying that.
Oh my goodness. Amber, thank you so much, you know, for taking time to chat with us again. And I feel like there's so many untouched areas that we could speak about, but we may have to have her back because we have
some stuff.
We have some stuff in the works with Amber that I think you would be great to chime in on. So, thank you so much for your time. Go kiss those beautiful girls.
Tell everybody
us.
Where they can find you.
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. You guys, first of all, thank you guys. Y'all are the best. I love you guys. Y'all are amazing. Examples of like just two people just doing the best that they can, parenting and relationship wise. Please keep that up because we need more great examples, you know, for real, for
real. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. People can find me on Twitter. I'm better on Twitter than I am on Instagram and TikTok. So I'm at Mom of All Capes everywhere. Mom of All Capes. And then also check out our Let's K-12 Better podcast. You know, so, you know, we do, my kids and I do a lot of talking together as a family. So if you want to learn how do I talk to my kids about topics, check out our podcast. We do a ton of modeling at the Let's K-12 Better podcast.
All right. So I think we should move into the moment of truth, yes. Baby. Have you been taking notes? I didn't see you had your pen or whatnot.
Well, first of all, I see you kind of rusty because if you'd like to be featured as one of our listener letters, email us at deadassadvice@gmail.com.
Give them the email one more time, baby.
Yeah, the email is deadassadvice@gmail.com. That's deadassadvice@gmail.com.
There you go. All right. So then I guess, is it moment of truth time now?
Yeah you
officially?
Good now. Officially? After right. I did all the heavy lifting, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Fine. Well, my moment of truth was actually pulled from something Amber said, which I think is great because I love when we have somebody who's an expert in a particular field that I can just learn from and absorb. So my moment of truth is to be not an enabler, but an empowerer when it comes to my children. Okay. And that can work for so many different areas of their life. Mm-hmm. Me wanting to be the comfort, you know, for them and having to be able to fight all their battles and you know, not have racism or any of that being experienced by them. Mm-hmm. But making sure that I am a place of comfort, yes, but also empowering at the same time. So that was my takeaway.
That was good. That was a good moment of truth.
You like that?
It was
good.
It was cool. Okay, it was light.
I guess there's levels to these moments of truth.
Yes, there's levels.
These moments of truth.
So the first one for me is love is a revolutionary act. Because, you know, first of all, teaching your children how to love can change the world.
Absolutely.
Teaching them to love themselves.
Literally changing.
Can change the world. And teaching them to love people who look like them and don't look like them can change the world. So love is a revolutionary act. The second one is building the capacity to be resilient, right? Mm-hmm. The way I've learned to build my children's capacity to be resilient is by giving them their history. Mm-hmm. Because if you understand the history of Black American people, you see that we are a resilient people.
For sure.
And if you hear our history, it is innate. I mean, if you think about where we came from in Africa, only the strong survived to get here to the shores of Jamestown. Then only the strong survived slavery. Mm-hmm. Then survived the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Then survived Jim Crow.
Right.
You know, like the strong are here.
Yeah.
So you have to think about the fact that you're here means that you're a survivor. And what that will do is in turn empower your children to be resilient because they'll realize that we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go, but you can be a part of the fight. So
this is amazing.
Building the capacity to be resilient.
For sure. Through history and through facts and through knowledge. And we got some stuff coming up
and
for y'all
love.
In the works.
We do got some stuff coming up for y'all.
That's going to help with this for sure. This, yes. I know. I'm excited about it as well, too. So be sure to follow us on social media we have an Instagram page now, y'all. Let me tell you, season 4 has all the gifts. You guys are getting all the things, all the gifts, okay? Dead Ass, the podcast on Instagram. Yes. And then, of course, Kadeen, I am.
And I am DeVal.
And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. I mean, wherever you listen, rate, review, subscribe, spread the word, all that stuff. Deadass.
Deadass is a production of iHeartMedia Podcast Network and is produced by Denora Pena and Tribble. Follow the podcast on social media at Deadass the Podcast and never miss a thing.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule.
It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.